Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 338 for February 14th, 2018. Hamcation and AI6TK, part two. Hey, hello everybody. It's Ham Nation time. It's Wednesday night, 8 o'clock central here on most of this same time zone. Of course, feel free to adjust your own clock as you see fit. It's Ham Nation time, and most of the principals, it seems like, are out tonight. George is gone, as is Bob, but we've got Mr. ICOM here, Ray Novak, sitting in. Hello, Raymond.
Good evening, sir.
It's good to have you in here in the shack. And we've got Amanda going to be coming in with the chat room a little bit. We'll have a segment from Randy with part two of, there's Amanda right there, her smiling face. Happy Hello. Valentine's Day. We will have... We'll have part two of Randy's conversation with Jerry Ellsworth from Quartz Fest. And, of course, why don't we go on out to the West Coast and see what's going on with Gordon West. I'm sure he's got some manner of foolishness for us.
We do. And speaking of Jerry and Amy, take a look. Leftover from Quartz Fest, they left me with some very special brew or a Ooh. Beverage antenna. I'm not sure about that. Anyway, it was great to hear the great reports about Orlando. And, you know, it takes a lot of ham volunteers, as Ray can tell you, to pull off a ham fest. And Orlando now number two. Wow. And we can't wait to see Dayton coming up. Dayton is well under control, getting bigger and better than ever. So, Hamfest season is here, and this weekend I take off for Yuma, the Yuma Hamfest in Yuma, Arizona, Friday and Saturday. But at all of the different shows I've been at, everybody comments about the trap deal. And they said, can you tell us one more time what goes bad with a trap? So I thought we'd do some short shots to take a close look at traps, and then we'll give you a live one here. But if we may, Victor, let's go ahead and start with the brief short shots. We talked about the MFJ HF and 6-meter radio, and most notable was the volume control that you see in the big blue down below the frequency. I'm not sure why they would take up that much room for volume, but the rest of the gear performed pretty darn well. It had a spectrum scope, sort of. It's a sampling type. It's not an active one from left to right. But for a small little box like that, software-defined radio, pretty amazing. But here's what we enjoyed most about working with a radio, and that is using it like a man pack. Well, in this case, a woman pack at Susie in 6GLF. And notice the antenna. That's not part of the MFJ lineup. You may have to go to a local CB radio shop. But that's a simple loaded 11-meter antenna. And if you want 10 meters, you just collapse one element. You want 15, you add a little bit to it. But the unit is totally portable, and for backpackers, it's a great way to go. Well, let's go from portable to all the excitement at Quartz Fest, and that's Bob into OML. Oh, my Lord. 100-plus contacts working the FT8 mode, and these were overnight contacts. He had been up all night. He's going to be at Yuma, we understand. And wow, take a look at that computer listing of all the activity on FT8. He was using a stepper IR vertical. He had that vertical tuned to a T, And it really pulled in both Asia as well as European contacts, as well as HF. So, Bob, good job. Want to repeat that at Yuma this coming weekend. The three-element or four-element tri-band, sometimes a quad-band beam antenna, may have different ways of achieving resonance on each of the different bands. And one of the most common ways are decoupling traps. And there you see the little large lumps there. We're taking this one down to fix what everybody said was a bad trap. And underneath those with black ends on each side, underneath the trap is something you need to know, because you don't need to send the traps back to the factory to fix them. And one of the most common things we found is when we found the antennas installed with the trap holes up. No, that's not for water evaporation. That's for rainwater to filter out through the bottom. So make sure that your trap holes on any trap antenna are pointing down, not up like we see here. And when you install the trap, make sure and install it in the direction of the instructions where the arrow says which way it goes. So what's happening in a trap? Well, a trap is a resonant circuit that's going to prevent energy from going any further out to the ends of the antenna element. And the first traps that you're going to run into would be the 10-meter trap, followed by the 15-meter trap. And if there's a 40-meter operation, there'll be a 20-meter trap, and then that goes all the way to the end. The LC circuit, here's the L, the inductive reactance, which when equaling the capacitive reactance creates resonance. Very little to go wrong here. Just make sure that those rivets are nice and tight if you decide to take your trap apart, and make sure you don't see any burn marks by running 5 kilowatts into a trap that can only handle about 1,500. Seldom have I ever seen a burn mark on a trap. The more common problem occurs inside once you put on that outside capacitive coupler. Now notice the black ring. The black ring hides what you need to be looking for. And the little black ring is nothing more than to keep the bugs out. When you remove the ring on one end, you'll see that the capacitor terminates to nothing. It just plain terminates. It's at the other end. So now you've got to remove the other black little bug catcher. It's the other end that has the problem. And here we've removed the black protective cover, and there is the problem. Notice that that small sheet metal screw is sort of wiggly, and that wiggly means that the outside capacitive reactance in that outside coil is not going to make a solid contact. So you have a capacitor that is not quite making it. But you can't see that you've got a bad loose screw until you whittle away at these little black end pieces. And you can get more of them from MFJ for the Cushcraft antennas and from the other antennas, or you can fashion up your own. They're there only to keep out the bugs and mice and other varmints. Once you peel that off, you're going to see that pesky little screw. And if you can rotate that outside trap capacitive reactance cover, if it rotates, then you know you've got to tighten that screw up. No big deal. Get a nut driver or a screwdriver, put it on that screw, and tighten it up. And it's also a good time to double check that all of the other traps are nice and tight as well. So, Victor, if you'll come back to the live trap here, and here's one, and here's the way we test it. We put our hand on it, and we rotate it back and forth. And if you can do this on a beam trap antenna, then you've got a loose one of these, and that's that screw that needs to be tightened up. Because the way a parallel tuned circuit works is 10 meters, that's the pink, will go out to the 10-meter trap and through high impedance will not travel any further than the 10-meter trap. The current circulates within that trap Nothing goes out the other side, isolating out. For 15 meters, we're going to go to the green area. And on the 15-meter trap, it will go ahead and stop anything further than 15 meters going out. And it uses the 10-meter trap as a little bit of loading. And when we get to the 20-meter trap, that's the one all the way on the 10, 15, 20-meter trap. We use the 20-meter trap if we have a 40-meter driven element on the antenna. If you only have two traps on each side of the driven element, then you have 10, 15, and all the way out to the end is 20. So that is how they create the capabilities of tri-band operation without relays and without any fancy capacitive stubs or anything like that. It's a simple LC resonant trap. And the traps do a great job, but only if this outside capacitive cover is well anchored to the boom. And there's only one area that anchors. So if you can grab it and it turns like this, you've got a loose trap. And I bet your SWR is jumping all over the place when that antenna is flexing in the wind. Yes, there are traps on both the reflector as well as the driven element. And hang on, I'm getting dry out here. Those are also problematic, but it's usually the driven element, especially if you have the 40-meter add-on kit, where that screw will either drop out or become very loose. So don't send your antenna back. Don't send the trap back. Just remove those little black end pieces and take a look. And if it's loose, take out a pair of pliers and or a screwdriver and tighten things up. Here's that CB antenna that you can get at CB shops. And that's going to make a great antenna if you decide to go portable with one of the MFJ portable rigs that they'll have out shortly. So, Don, that's my story at this end. We'll see everybody at Yuma, Arizona tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And so, Don, back to you. And what's new with you and Ray?
Well, I've got a question for you. Ray and I were just sitting here discussing this while you were giving your demo. Could you show us again exactly what's wrong with that trap and how the movement and everything? Could you show us that one more time, please? Because we were thinking about this.
Yeah. Are you trying to say that there's a screw loose here, Don?
No, I'm saying that.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Gordon.
Right here.
Yeah.
And this is where, if that screw gets loose, the whole thing turns. Yeah. It's not this end. No, this end is fine. It's this end right here, and you can actually see where the screw's got to go through there and make connection. Yeah. So if the outside begins to turn like this.
Yeah. Right, like that. That's what we're talking right there. That's the move that we're looking for. Ray and I have discovered that if you have anything that you can grab and twist like that and it moves like that, you've got bigger problems than you think you do, son.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're neither electrical engineers, antenna theorists, nor physicians, but we can tell you without a shadow of a doubt that, well, you got problems, son. That's all I got to tell you.
And it's interesting with as many people that we see at different shows and that you ask them anything about their antenna.
Yeah.
And they'll tell you, oh, it's perfect. It's been up there since 1950 something.
That's right.
And they've never taken it down. So Gordo, that's great advice on what they need to look for. And occasionally take a look at their antennas.
Yeah, and you want that hole at the top so the heat comes out. No, that's not what you want. Hey, speaking of problems, WTWW, normally we're on 5085. They have got some major league transmitter and other issue problems over there, so we're not on 5085 tonight, but we are on 12.105, so the folks over in Africa can hear us, and that's always a good thing because, you know, we like to spread the love worldwide as we do here. So hello to the WTWW listeners that can hear us. We're going to talk a little bit with Ray about his experience with Orlando, but first, why don't we get the news of the week from Amateur Radio Newsline, and Dr. T is going to be with us as well via Newsline because there is some big solar doings coming, so you're going to want to pay attention to this. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2102, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, February 14th, 2018. It's time once again for School Club Roundup.
Twice each year, school clubs from elementary through college get on the air for a week to make as many contacts as possible. The event takes place Monday, February 12th through Friday, February 17th, and there are new clubs participating every year.
At least one of those school clubs is so new that it's getting on the air for the first time during the roundup. Ben Pecora, K2CPU, a 15-year-old student at West Islip High School in New York, worked school club roundup stations from home in the past and decided to get permission to add his school, complete with a vanity call sign W2WIH, to those participating.
Originally, the whole story of the starting this club is I got my license and he got his license. And then towards the end of the year, I jokingly suggested we start a radio club. And he was like, that's actually a cool idea. So this September, we started going through with it and got the vanity call sign and set up the logbooks. So we're all ready to go for the contesting software.
Ben says that they are starting with a temporary setup to get the ball rolling.
My teacher, KD2FKP, he just bought his 7300 for his home station, so we're just going to use that.
Look for hashtag ARRLSCR on Twitter, and for complete rules, visit ARRL.org/school-club-roundup. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, hoping to hear you on the air from K9SOU.
Alabama hams everywhere are ramping up to celebrate a milestone year.
Fresh from celebrating its 198th birthday on December 14th, the state of Alabama is ready to party, ham radio style. It's a big blowout that will continue for the next 2 years until the state's bicentennial year. The Alabama Bicentennial Amateur Radio Club, AL2C, marked the occasion late last year with Governor Kay Ivey and control operator Otto Arnosht, N4UZZ. But that on-the-air moment is hardly the end of it. Special event stations will be operating throughout the state in the months ahead, beginning with a station at the Birmingham Fest on March 2nd and 3rd, on HF and possibly D-Star on REF-058B. Any special event operations that happen subsequently on DMR can be found on Brandmeister, TG-3101, Alabama. You can keep track of happenings on the club's Facebook page or on the website al2c.org or QRZ. Send QSLs via Logbook of the World. Hams wanting a certificate can download and print one out at the club website. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB.
You know, they say the job isn't complete until the paperwork is done. Well, the FCC wants to hear from you about emergency response to this past Atlantic hurricane season.
In the U.S., the Atlantic hurricane season is over, but in a way, it's not really finished. The Federal Communications Commission has been trying to assess emergency response to the deadly 2017 season, which included the four major hurricanes Maria, Nate, Harvey, and Irma in the U.S. and its territories. The agency's Public Safety and Homeland Security Bureau was receiving public comments until the 22nd of January and is now awaiting reply comments, which are due no later than the 21st of February. The notice, which is on the FCC website, is PS docket number 17-344. Comments are being sought on broadcaster's response, government agency response, and, of course, amateur radio response. The FCC is looking for answers in particular as to whether ham radio services should be increased to assist in the planning, testing, and delivery of emergency response and recovery communications. For assistance in filing your comments online, call the FCC's electronic comment filing system at 202-418-0193. You can also file directly from the website at fcc.gov/ECFS. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD.
For the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, Stephen Kinford, N8WB, Heather Emby, KB3TZD, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3, we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now, here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
We wait on pins and needles for an Earth-directed solar storm to arrive and possibly bring us a good chance for aurora. Will it give us something to celebrate with our Valentines? Those stories are more in the news this week. The space weather this week is getting really exciting. Just like we mentioned last week, Region 2699 has not disappointed us. It has fired a solar storm right when it was in the middle of the Earth strike zone. And this storm is now on its way to Earth. In fact, it could hit us at any moment. And right now, it's still Valentine's Day in certain parts of the world. So some of you may get lucky enough to celebrate Valentine's with Aurora. And then on top of that, we have this elongated coronal hole that's going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone here in the next couple days. It is sending fast wind on the tails of that solar storm. So even though we may not get some really big storming, intense storming, it should last for a long period of time as we get kind of a 1-2 punch. Switching to your M-Flare threat meter, you can see back on the 4th is when Region 2699 came into view, and pop, up goes the X-ray flux and the solar flux. You amateur radio operators and emergency responders have been enjoying some decent radio propagation as long as this region has been in Earth view. It's been popping a few C-class flares, even a couple near M-class flares, but has been reasonably quiet, not really an M-flare player. And then the beginning of the 12th, bam, it pops up this very long-duration C-class flare. And when you see those big long-duration flares like that, that usually means that there's an eruption with a solar storm that's being launched, and that's exactly what has happened. Since then, the region has kind of quieted down a little bit, but we've got a couple more days before this region rotates out of Earth view, and then probably starting next week, the radio propagation is going to start tanking again. Switching to your solar storm conditions, you can see we've actually been quiet for quite some time. We've been bumping around between normal conditions to even unsettled conditions. And really the only people getting some decent aurora are up there at high latitudes. You know who you are, the ones who are actually getting decent aurora views. The rest of us, meanwhile, have been kind of waiting in a dry spell for a while. Luckily, these conditions aren't going to last because we are anticipating the hit from that solar storm that's en route to Earth, and we could actually bump up to storm level, or at least active levels, here in the next 24 hours or so. So when exactly is this solar storm supposed to hit us? Well, this is our prediction model, ENLIL. This is NOAA's version of the model. The top panel's density, the bottom panel's velocity, and you can see that solar storm coming out and hitting Earth. It's predicted to hit Earth right on the 14th, about midday, a little bit later, which is Valentine's Day. But you can see that this green ribbon of stuff here, this is actually due to some fast wind that is coming up behind the solar storm. This green ribbon is actually serving to slow the solar storm down, and it makes predictions quite complicated. So even though it's supposed to arrive on Valentine's Day, according to NOAA, it hasn't gotten here quite yet. Now, if we switch to NASA's version of the model for ENLIL, you can see here, this is also a density map. You can see that solar storm coming out, and when it hits Earth, now NASA's version is saying that the storm should hit about noon on the 15th. So the predictions are almost a day apart. But again, this is complicated because the solar wind behind the storm is complicated, and it's hard to know exactly how much this poor storm is going to be pushed and pulled by the fast wind behind it. Switching to your solar storm and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are anticipating the hit from that incoming Earth-directed solar storm. At high latitudes, NOAA is expecting about a 60% chance of a major storm, with minor storm conditions to follow after that, and then active conditions to follow after that. We're expecting probably 4 days of some decent storming because we get that high-speed wind that's going to kick in right after that big solar storm hits. Now, at mid-latitudes, we're only expecting active conditions over the next couple days with about a 30% chance of a minor storm. And again, things will last. You get some type of disturbance easily for the next couple days, maybe even 3 or 4 days. It really depends upon how this 1-2 punch with the solar storm and the fast wind kind of combine to extend our storming. So the nice thing is, you aurora photographers, this isn't going to be a super intense set of storms, but it's long duration. So you will have multiple chances to get your shots in. Switching to our solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, Region 2699 has given us a lot of gifts, including a chance for aurora, and you amateur radio operators and emergency responders have definitely enjoyed some decent propagation over the last couple weeks, but now it's time to say goodbye. We only have a couple days left before this region rotates to the backside of the sun. NOAA's giving about a 5 to 10% chance of an M-class flare over the next day or two, and then the M-flare risk drops precipitously back to basically normal. We'll have a spotless sun most likely. Now, we also have a slight risk for a radiation storm over the next couple days as that region rotates off to the west limb. If it fires a big flare, we oftentimes get a radiation storm when it's on the west limb. But the big story here is the solar flux. Region 2699 is going to take the solar flux with it when it disappears. So you amateur radio operators, you emergency responders, enjoy the propagation here, because as we start next week, we're probably going to go back to poor conditions. So the space weather this week is very exciting. We are on pins and needles waiting for the Valentine's Day storm to hit us. It's going to be followed by some fast wind. So you aurora photographers, you might get an extended chance to get aurora over a couple days or so. And you get bonus points for upping the romance factor in your shots. Now, you amateur radio operators and emergency responders, you should be enjoying some decent propagation on Earth's day side for the next couple of days before region 2699 rotates to the backside of the sun and propagation will tank. Now, you might have some issues on the Earth's night side during the solar storm, but then again, you might get some auroral propagation, and that'll be a bit fun, too. As far as your GPS operators are concerned, on the day side, you should be in good shape. On the night side, if you're at high latitudes near aurora, that could be a little bit of an issue for you, and maybe at the dawn dusk terminators. So just kind of be a little bit more aware over the next couple days. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Always great information from Dr. T. She is on top of it. If you don't follow her on Twitter, then you really should, and there's something wrong with you, and Ray and I really don't want you in the house. Don't you agree? You follow her on Twitter, don't you? You really should.
Yes,
amazing. I mean, I've seen her tweeting at 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. I've got up at 6 o'clock, turned on the computer, and she sent me like a private message, like 5 minutes earlier going, are you watching this? It's like the woman doesn't sleep. She loves her work, and we love her for sharing it with us. And, she's studying for her ham ticket. She sent me a private message on Twitter the other day. A screenshot of her taking her practice test on the computer. So she's working on it. Why don't we get a word from one of our sponsors? It's this tiny little radio company called I think so. Roll the tape. Let's find out what this is all about.
Communicating has never been more fun than with ICOM. From D-Star to SDR, ICOM uses the most advanced technology in their radios. The SDR you've asked for is here. ICOM's new 7610 is a high-performance RMDR with the ability to pick out the faintest signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The new ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling, software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR transceiver. RF direct sampling system, 110 dB RMDR, independent dual receivers, and dual digicell. Communicate with a new D-Star communications device. Easy to operate, the ID31A Plus is available in silver, red, or gold. Worldwide digital communication. Share pictures and text messages. IPX waterproof, compact, lightweight, and tough. The ID31A Plus is the new UHF handheld that you'll want. Visit ICOMAmerica/amateur for more information on all the great ICOM radios.
And, you can also enter to win ICOM's weekly drawing for ICOM swag, like a hat, T-shirts. They've got all kinds of stuff. And don't forget to check out the details on the ICOM monthly grand prize drawing, which is this month, Ray. It's a pop quiz. You didn't know. Oh, look, see, cheating. He's putting it up on the screen here.
The ID51A Plus 2.
There you go. It's an amazing radio. I've got the 51. My son has the 51. I've got the 51, the second one. It was the 51
anniversary.
I don't have the anniversary. I've got the other
one. I thought you had the orange one.
It is orange. It's not an anniversary.
Okay.
But great radios, and the Plus 2 adds a whole lot more. You can go there on the website and find out just exactly what it adds. And it's all right there at icomamerica.com/hamnation. The official rules are there. Check out all of ICOM's previous drawing winners. Sign up. Good luck. You too can win a great ICOM radio courtesy of our friends like Ray here from ICOM. So great company, great stuff, great supporter of Ham Nation, and we appreciate them so much. All right, so Ray, let's talk a little bit about your experiences at Orlando. I have never made the Orlando Hamfest yet. I'm sorry to say. It's on my bucket list. I did Miami like in 95, but I haven't done Orlando yet. So tell me your insider perspective of how you thought Orlando went this year.
Well, I haven't made it in the last 2 years because of family commitments. So it was a little bit of a surprise to get there, and we were right at the very front. And right across the aisle from us where normally the prize barrel was, there's a man in purple.
Yeah.
It wasn't one of the singing raisins either.
No?
I mean, there was Bob with his pine board, and we were busy talking about the radio, and he was busy talking about the radio.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Gordon, I think you said that the attendance was way up this year. I can tell you from the way our booth traffic was and everybody else's comments that it was definitely way up. And it has firmly moved into the number two rankings right behind Hamvention.
Wow. Amazing. I'm kind of catching you off guard here a little bit, but is there anything new coming down the pipe from ICOM that you can maybe give us a sneak peek on?
Well, at the Tokyo Ham Fair, they showed the IC9700, and we had a lot of questions about it, and unfortunately, we don't know anything other than it was a prototype. So I can understand how some of the automotive manufacturers feel when you've got the big car show,
yeah,
and there's something under glass that may or may not ever come. And
right.
Boy. It was interesting to see the group of people that are interested in that radio.
What exactly is the IC9700?
9700 looks like it's going to be a companion to the 7300 that gives you VHF, UHF, 1.2 gig. We don't know if it's going to be standard with it or an option. It'll have D-Star in it. And it's just going to be for those that do not want the all-in-one like the 9100.
Okay. All right. Okay, so it's not going to have the HF part of it.
It will not. So
just VHF, UHF, and maybe higher.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's interesting.
We don't know anything about the specs as far as the output power.
Right.
I would hope that it would have satellite functionality.
Yeah.
And especially to support the new D-Star satellite that went up.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Good stuff. Well, there's something to look forward to. Maybe see if that comes to fruition.
We'll find out in a few months at Dayton. Because
looking forward to that, yeah.
If it is going to be something that's coming soon, we'll have it in our booth.
That's where it'll be. Now, you did not get to make it to Quartz Fest, unfortunately, this year. But our friend Randy did. And if you watched last week, you saw that he caught up with Jerry Ellsworth. And we've got part two of that. So why don't we go ahead and run that now?
You have a mag loop here. Why don't you tell us about that, Jerry?
So I put this mag loop together for field day this year. It was the night before. I'm like, I want to do something more than just show up at field day and offer it. I want to do something educational. So Amy and I ran off to Home Depot. We grabbed just stuff from the home supply store, just random copper pieces. And fortunately, I had some Jennings and Comet vacuum variable capacitors, but
just happen to have some. Happen,
you know, you got to acquire these things along the way. That's when you see them at Hamfest and other places. Actually, one of them comes from a good friend that works at a company that does plasma etchers for the semiconductor company. And when they service them, they take them out of service, and so I'm constantly scavenging those. But so we whipped this together for 40 meters. Tuned it up manually by hand, so the vacuum capacitor down here, you have to turn it to get it resonant on the particular frequency you want to receive or broadcast. I love mag loops. They're pretty interesting. For really low frequencies, they actually perform very very well.
So what's this, about 4 feet on a side?
Yeah, it's 4 feet on a side. It has just your standard copper fittings. I didn't want to solder it together, which would probably be the right thing to do to lower the resistance.
Right, you really want...
Yeah, resistance is your enemy in a mag loop. You want lots of current flowing. But actually, it performs fairly well. We've been doing some whisper side-by-side tests with... Amy picked up a DX Engineering loaded whip antenna, and we tuned it into 40 meters just to have a side-by-side to see how they perform. you know, if I had my choice between a dipole at 40 meters up way in the air or a mag loop, I'd probably take the dipole.
Yeah.
But some of the stuff I do at home for 80 and 160, I can't get a dipole high enough in the air. So I take a mag loop every day over that.
And what's up on the roof?
This is our satellite tracking antenna. So this is a pretty interesting unit that comes from Portable Rotator. So it's a 12-volt rotator that will, you know, through software control, track satellites and help you, you know, keep them in sight. Amy and I were trying to do satellite with the long arrow. There's the longer one. It was so heavy. For 10 minutes, I couldn't hold it in the air.
No.
So we got this and in hopes of contacting some of the new satellites. And turns out lots of software issues. Windows likes to crash in the middle of tracking, and it likes to wind itself up around the cables and stuff. So we've been struggling here at Quartz Fest with mostly software issues with the tracking system. A guy came over with his, like, stubby arrow antenna and handheld me through making my first contact on one of the new Fox satellites, the one that just went up a month or two ago.
Oh, very good.
So that was exciting.
Oh, yeah, AO91.
Yeah.
AO91, yeah.
I have such mic fright, even even a year and a half into this hobby. My hand was shaking while we were doing it. And satellite exchanges are even more frantic and... And fast pace.
Yeah.
So luckily he was there and can't remember his call sign, but urged me to like actually do it and told me what the exchange was supposed to be and baby fed it to me. So
cool. Well, let's look at your solar that you're powering your RV with.
All right.
Yeah. So am I on now?
You're on.
Okay, so we picked up a what's called a suitcase solar system. So it folds up and is easy to transport. It's about 200 watts. And we were using it actually just to charge up the LiFePO4 battery that we have on board. But then it was doing so well with that. And our solar on the roof of the RV is only about 100 watts. And it, because you can't tip them, you're not getting the best angle with the sun in order to get the full capacity out of it. So we decided, well, let's go on ahead and hook it into our coach batteries here. It is charging them almost full within hours of hooking it up. This thing works brilliantly.
Because you have, what, 4 6-volt?
Yeah, we have 4 6-volts in there. So, you know, basically 2 12-volt banks together. And I think we have about 464 amp hours of battery power on board. And these are fresh batteries. We actually just got these right before Quartz Fest.
Oh,
so
okay.
Found a fantastic battery place in San Jose. All they do is battery stuff. So, you know, if you need battery things, I think it's Battery Systems is the company. Mm. They gave us a screaming deal on those things and the LiFePO4 battery.
Wow.
Yeah, good company.
Cool.
So, yeah, there you go. So for field day, while Jerry was building her portable mag loop antenna, I decided I wanted to do a simple tape measure fox hunt antenna. These are pretty easy to build. There's plans for them all over the place online. So, you know, if you want to build one, it's just look it up on Google. You'll be able to find it. Pretty easy to do. You can get some cheap tape measure from Harbor Freight, which is what...
Free?
Almost free, yeah. That's
well
you know, that's
coupon.
Right. That's right. If you have the coupon for it, you can end up getting
it
for free.
You go in and you buy a 99-cent something and get a free tape measure
exactly.
for your antenna.
I haven't done an offset attenuator for this yet, but that's in the works. We had a little visit from Gordo last night, so I never got around to putting it together. But it worked brilliantly, so we just I would just tune my little Kenwood transceiver handheld, tune it up a little bit or a little bit down as I got closer to the signal. Worked great. Really helped me nail those little fox hunt transmitters.
And the improvement that you've done, which I've never seen before...
A little ergonomic,
nice little handle.
Little ergonomic handle to make it easier to carry around.
That's cool. Yeah, thanks for sharing.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So on the way to Quartz Fest, I wanted to get a lot of grid squares, so I was knocking off grid squares like
crazy.
Are you
doing the ARRL grid thing for the year?
Yeah. Better watch out. I'm going for it.
Go.
So I wanted to maximize my grid squares while we're driving. So we put in, what is this?
FT-857?
857, HF and VHF transceiver. So that lives under the seat on a nice little wood platform with all the car stereo stuff. We have a computer up in the mom's attic in the top of the RV. That's all the wires fed down through here and comes up. We use a wireless keyboard. We can do FT-8 the whole way.
Ah.
So I picked up tons and tons of contacts as we were driving. We have the ATAS 120 antenna in the front. So I started off on 20 and moved to 40 when the gray line came along. And, man, I was New Zealand, Japan, and East Coast. It was really performing well.
Well, they say the bands are dead, but
no,
you have to get on.
Yeah.
And make some noise, and people come back to you.
Whoops.
Whoops, crash, bang.
Sorry I broke your rig, Amy.
No.
Amy made this really nice Panavice mount for it in brackets, so it holds the mic on the back, the front panel of the radio, and then this little computer screen monitor. And then one little turn, and then you can just position it wherever you need.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Just amazing. Good stuff from Randy and Jerry and Amy. Those girls, there's just something about nerd chicks, man. There's just something about smart girls. I don't know.
That makes you want to hide?
No. Lord, no. Makes me want to go hang out with them. Because they're going to teach me stuff. I'm an idiot. I try to surround myself with brilliant people, and man.
Then why am I here?
I sort of try.
Okay.
Doesn't always work out. So, and, you know, the sad thing is, Ray and I we're just completely and totally hopeless. And Amanda, maybe you can help bail us out here. But while Jerry's talking, and of course, while Dr. T was talking, we're just sitting here giggling like Beavis and Butthead because, you know, we just twist everything because that's what we do. But, Jerry Ellsworth is just amazing. She has got a brain on her. Ray was telling me some things about when he was talking to her.
Yeah, I got to meet her at Pacificon, and it was just mind-boggling to hear her talk about this loop. And she's talking about doing some automation with it. And I go, well, you know what? You could look at the SWR calculations and do all that by hardware, but using it that 7300 that they were using, and then looking at the 7610.
Yeah.
With the CI-5 protocol, you could have it all computer-controlled, pick process, and immediately you could see that was just a poof
the
moment.
Wheels, the wheel started turning.
Oh, yeah. Did it ever.
Yeah. Just I met her and Amy at Dayton this last year and didn't get a chance to spend much time with them. But, just absolutely brilliant. Well, we have got a lot of time tonight, Amanda, for chat room, something that we rarely ever have. So let's get into the chat room and see what kind of questions that we have, and see what's going on tonight.
Okay, we will. Actually, I have to show you guys something first. Hold on. Don, you helped with this.
Okay. I think I know what this is.
Looks like a dog.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't look like a dog. I made this for Jeff.
No, this does not require the censored slide, I don't think. Oh, there it is.
Is it up high enough? Can you all see it?
Yeah, it's perfect.
Oh, wow.
So that came out pretty cool.
This is my voice. I sent Don a recording, and I said, Don, put this into your audio software and take a snapshot of it and send it to me. And he did. So this is my audio saying, I love you, Jeff. And then I had it sent over to Walgreens and put on Canvas, and I gave it to him today. And he said, what a unique gift from such a unique person. So I think he likes
that
it.
Cool.
Well, I'm glad I could help you out with that. I'm thrilled that I'm glad that you used that particular one. I sent you like six different screenshots.
Yeah.
That one is from Audacity, which has the white background. The other one from Adobe Audition and Cool Edit Pro has the dark background. And that's perfect. I was going to ask you how that turned out. So that's even better than I imagined in my head. So you did
that,
good.
That rocks, and it kind of makes me feel bad because I got for Cindy a photo with a heart, looked like it carved in a tree with Cindy and Ray. But Amanda, you rocked. That really is pretty cool.
Very nice.
Well, thank
and
you.
And a level of geekness, too.
Yeah, that's right.
I know. He did say, you're such a nerd. said.
See?
Or maybe such a geek. I'm not sure which one he said, but I said, I know, but I am nowhere in the realms of Jerry. She blows my mind, her and Amy both. I'll tell you what. And someone said on chat, well, I can't wait for the segment on the magnetic loop building. Me either. Can we see that video too? I'd like to see how they put that together. So let's see. We've got some questions. Actually, this first question, Gordo, I'm going to send to you. Joe K9JPP wants to know, where can he find a replacement capacitor for his Astron 12-volt 30-amp power supply?
Astron is the most user-friendly company. If you were out here, Jeff, we would drive you over there, and while you wait maybe half an hour, they would replace it. They are spectacular. So contact Astron at their email address. Tell them which model you have, and they'll get it in the mail on a credit card to you within about 30 minutes. I mean, Astron is wonderful with their clients. So go direct.
All right. Well, that answers that. And Gordo, just one more thing. Jeff was watching on the computer in the other room that doesn't have any speakers, so I don't know how much he was following of this, but he was watching your trap segment, and he said, remind everyone they can buy all those boots and all the trap parts and everything from MFJ. So if I missed you say that, I apologize, but MFJ does make some replacement parts for those. Jeff and I also use the same exact antenna, you guys, and we do on occasion deal with some SWR, especially in high winds. You know, when that flexes, Gordo was talking about, it does cause some SWR. And it's weird, when we point to the west, we seem to have a lot more complications than any other direction. So, Gordo, do you have anything weird like that with yours?
Yeah, just point it toward the east. Don't point it toward the west, and all will be well. But again, I have a feeling it's probably going to be on the driven element. And once you lower it down, which is no easy feat, just grab the trap. And if it does this routine, you know you got to tighten up that screw. Get out your screwdriver and you'll be set.
Yeah, all 55 feet up there. We'll get right on it. Let's see.
I think Ray and I have a theory.
200 feet in the air.
Why you have issues pointing to the west? What it is that it's Gordon's electric personality desensing your radio.
No, thank you, Don. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I didn't think about that. Maybe it is.
Nah. We think about this stuff so you don't have to.
Oh, thank you. I don't want to know what else you guys have been thinking about all show. Let's see. I've got some questions. Well, I do have one question for Ray. This one is long, so try to stay with me here.
That wasn't the explicative I remember her using.
Oh, you shut up the text message? Really? Okay, here goes. What can be done regarding the ACC audio out, which has 4.7K ohms with 100 millivolts to 300 millivolts? Oh, excuse me, 300 megavolts, I believe it is, out to a line input of a mixer. And I do believe he's referring to one of your ICOM radios here, Ray. You can barely hear any sound. The mixer line inputs are 10K ohms and the mic inputs are low impedance, typically 100 ohms. Either way, there's a super mismatch. What can be done? Has ICOM come up with something?
I would say look at using some matching transformers. I mean, Gordon and George always talk about getting your transformers to match your audio to handle those impedance mix matches.
Yeah, it's got to be a level thing, too. If he's coming out of a mixing board, that is line level. So you would have to go, I'm trying to know if the accessory port on the back of the radio takes line level audio. It probably does. But if you're going to go into the front, into the microphone, that is microphone level, which is very, very low. You're going to have to pad that way down. Otherwise, you're going to overload the audio input of the front of that radio if you're going in from the mic. And it will sound horrible, which is why I don't run my mixer into my radio. I run my PR40. Actually, I have. If you see this boom now that Ray is on, there are two microphone cords hanging there. One is the big one is for the radio, And the smaller diameter one, there you go. The big one, that's unplugged, that's for the radio. That goes directly to the front of my ICOM. And the other one, the smaller one, goes into my audio chain and USB into my computer. So I don't even run my mixer into the computer. That would be a question for Bob, likely, Bob and George, as how to interface a mixer.
And not to try to skirt around it, I really don't do a whole lot with the audio. I am one of those that will run a mixer into the microphone jack, but with the latest ones with the EQ on it, with how low my voice is already, the last thing I need is that more, extra low end on
more
it.
More bass boost, yeah.
So, honestly, that's a segment of the hobby that I really don't get into, so I would not be the expert on that. So, like you said, Don, probably Bob's going to be a better coach on that.
I know Bob has covered interfacing mixers with your HF radio. Several times on this show, so check out the Ham Nation wiki that Dan Van Evenhoven does for us, and you'll be able to find out exactly where that is. So maybe we'll get Bob to revisit that. And speaking of Astron power supply, somebody on Facebook posted a picture. They found a rack mount RS50 with the meters. Said they got it for free at a ham fest, and it worked.
That's a bad four-letter F word to mention on hams.
Yeah, I told them I'd give them twice what they paid for it, maybe triple, but I didn't get a bite.
Wow, that is a good deal. If ever you see power supplies for free, actually anything, if for free, take. I think that's one of my good Ham Elmer's best mottos. Yep. You just grab it.
It's for me.
That's right.
I've seen us throw things out in a crowd at a ham fest. Hams diving for it, not knowing what it was. And then, what did you guys throw out? What did I miss?
It's like a blue light special during Christmas time at Kmart back in the day, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Crazy. Yeah, and then they find out you were throwing out Windows 98 operating systems, and then they're like, okay, I'll give it to my grandkid for Christmas. No, I'm kidding. People are not that bad, but seriously.
Old AOL CDs.
Oh, yes. That's funny.
I found a use for the old AOL CDs years ago. I went down to Hobby Lobby and I got the little clock kit, and I made clocks out of the AOL CDs.
That's a good thing to make out of old hard drives too. All right. No one was really sending me a lot of questions in the chat room, but I have a few of my own. So Ray, you actually brought a 7610 to Don's house with you.
Yes, have you guys been playing with it? I'm planning on leaving with it too.
Oh, darn it. Now, so Don, what do you think? This is your first impression of it, the first time you've seen it, right? Tell us.
Well, we plugged it in 30 minutes before the show, and I had to edit Tamitha Scove's video together, so I haven't really had a chance to play with it. He's got it on 7248 right now, and so we're going to play with it a little bit after the show's over. Maybe check into the after show net if we can and see what that's all about. So yeah, from what I've seen, it's absolutely gorgeous.
And there seems to be a huge CW pileup going on right now. And we found a lot of noise here too.
Oh, I've got tons of noise in this house.
Yeah. In 40 meters right now, you might just have to go down to 80 just in case, but if you have an 80 meter antenna, of course. Ray, tell us a little bit, since the latest craze is FT8, how's the 7610 with FT8 operations?
It's very simple to do. I mean, it's just as simple as your 7600. Mm-hmm. Download the drivers, plug in the USB port, install the drivers, and then use your favorite software to use it.
Very good. I have not. Have you, Don? Have you done FT8 yet? I know you're kind of a whisper guy, but
I've played with it. I haven't fully grasped FT8 as of yet. Nor the JT65 stuff. I haven't fully grasped all of that. But I've played with the sound card modes a lot, which is what that is. And the 7600. It just works superbly because it's got the USB built into it. You don't have to use an outboard box like a signal link like I had to use with my I used a signal link with the TS2000 and it worked great. I used a signal link or something. What did I use? Rig Blaster, I think, or something Rig Rogers or something I used with my 706 years ago, and it worked great as well. But having all that built into the radio is just, I mean, it's the epitome of plug and play. It couldn't be any easier.
And WSJTX worked real nicely.
Yeah, it works great. Yeah,
I'm gonna be showing George and Tommy later on this week. I've got a Dell tablet that I use. Makes a real small, compact Go kit, and we'll probably play around with some of that as well.
Cool.
That ought to be really fun. So obviously it was easy for you to bring it into a new place, set it up, just plug it into his antennas, no sweat. Auto-tuning went just fine for you, or does Don just have a resonant antenna?
I use the Emmett's DX80 off-center fed dipole and the DX160 off-center fed dipole, and we just basically unplugged the 7600, moved it over to the side, and it's the same power cord. It's the same microphone plug. I didn't plug it into the computer because I didn't know if the USB would recognize it as another computer or another radio or whatever. So we have that unplugged, but I just plugged the coaxes in the back, the two PL plugs, and turned it on and went to town.
Very simple.
Yeah. Worked great.
Okay. So another couple questions on here. One person asked again, what was the new radio you were talking about that's going to come out pretty soon? You were talking about it at the beginning of the show.
I didn't say it was coming out pretty soon. We'll be hopefully showing it at Dayton. They showed it at the Tokyo Ham Fair under glass. And I've got a rule. If it's under glass, it's a minimum of 1 year away.
Yeah.
So
All right.
That's
well,
about right. Yeah.
Gordo, if you remember, when we showed the IC7000 under glass, it was exactly 1 year later.
Yeah. 1999, the TS2000 was under glass, and it was 1 year later. So that's about right, no matter who the manufacturer is.
So the radio was the IC9700, 9700.
Something to put on your radar.
There you go. And of course, you know, then they would speculate about the radio, and then they want to speculate about the price. So don't worry, everyone. They'll let us know when they get close to that.
All will be revealed.
That has been some of the most fun, is watching people speculate on what the price should be. And the 7610 we've seen, well, it's $2,7300, so it's going to be the same price. And I'd made the comment at Orlando, and I had one guy look at me funny. If those that are speculating on price based on something that already exists, without, they really don't understand the technology, because the 7610 takes the Digicel preselectors that are in the 7851 and the higher end radios, and then incorporates two of those, not one, but two of them for each receiver. That adds some cost to it.
Oh, yeah.
And it becomes very helpful when you get to 40, 80, and 160 with those preselectors.
We've got a 160 antenna on tonight, so we may play with that for a little while.
Oh, that might be interesting. And maybe I'm just typing here on chat. Kevin usually does the 40-meter net, and he says, it's really blah tonight, S910 over noise. So if they do the 80-meter net instead, maybe you guys can pop on there for a minute and try it out and see how that sounds. So, Kevin, if you're listening, maybe you guys want to go to 80. Gordo, did you have any questions for Ray and Don tonight?
No, I just wanted to tell Ray what a great job the 9100, the older 9100, did at Quartzfest on FT8 and several other digital modes, plus D-Star. We had a great time with that rig. It had a ton of dust on it, but we blew all the dust out, and it works like a champ, and it's getting ready tomorrow to go to Yuma Hamfest.
Excellent.
Yuma. And I'm seeing 3908 for the 80-meter net. So you guys flip on over there, see if you can hear anything. I didn't have any other chat questions. Ray, what else do you want to tell us? What's going on in your life? You're not with Miss Cindy Lou tonight. So what are your plans for the rest of the week?
Oh, I'm headed up to visit with George and Tommy for Friday. I don't know exactly what all that George has planned for us, but we're a couple of projects that we'll work on and hopefully shoot some video for.
That's great. They're always a hoot. It's all of you that watch Amateur Logic. it's not like they have way far out funniness. It's more like slapstick or very dry humor, and I really kind of enjoy watching them occasionally. So.
Yeah, it's the really kind of humor do. That makes you think. Yeah,
it is.
But George and George and Tommy are brilliant. So just the stuff. Every time I watch, I learn something new. So it's a great show. Amateur Lodge is just a great show.
You expect at any moment to hear, it's another fine mess you've gotten us
exactly.
into.
Yes, exactly. That's about right.
It's either that or bring out the potato gun and it's a show. You never know what you're going to get with those guys. And all the Raspberry Pi teachings too. Perfect. All right, enough rattling on. Let's go over some other nets we got going on tonight. Like I just mentioned, HF 40 meters, probably not going to happen. Check into 3908 with the Steve W7UDI. And we have our UHF VHF net. So we have DMR TAC 311. We have D-Star 14 Charlie, which I love to check into every week. There's a lot of check-ins there. But the net controls do an awesome job and get us all there, get comments from everyone, and pretty thorough in explaining everything about the show. Also, we have Echo Link, and that's on Dewdrop In. So there you have it. By the way, thanks, Dr. T, for a wonderful report this week. That's all I got. Don, it's up to you to wrap this show up.
Okay, we're looking at 40, and 40 actually isn't looking all that bad, is it, Ray?
No, it's got quite a bit of activity, and like I mentioned,
there's a lot of CW down there. There's just a ton of CW down there.
Yeah,
very good. Well, we cannot forget it's time for the yearly TWIT survey, and of course, we want to hear from you. So, TWIT can serve you better. Head on over to twit.tv/survey, and tell them how you use TWIT, all the shows that you watch, and what you like. What you think could be done better. Just answer the survey. It shouldn't take more than just a few minutes. They're not going to ask you any, like, really seriously personal question, you know, like Ray is asking me over here. But, you know how Ray is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Ray, you can't have Dr. T's phone number.
Yeah. But go do the survey for by all means, go take care of the TWIT survey. So, Ray, thanks for coming out and visiting us here in Picayune, America tonight. It's your first time here in the lovely AE5DW Ham Radio Palace.
It's usually exactly first time here. It's usually on a drive down in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. But, hey, great hospitality here. And you'll have to check in on Amateur Logic to see if I got out of here alive.
Yeah, that's right. You may. Yeah. You want to take some of that chicken taco stuff with you on the way out?
To help feed and divert them? Yeah.
Ooh, my wife made chicken tacos tonight for us. And, No, chicken tacos. Really, really, really good stuff. It was crock pot stuff all day today. And we had it all to ourselves because it's the first day of Lent. And so she's trying to get back on her diet. So she's on a liquid diet today. She's just doing protein shakes. So we had chicken tacos all to ourselves.
Along with some unique hot sauce from LSU.
From LSU, yeah, which replaces replaces the vinegar in the hot sauce with alcohol, like bourbon and vodka and rum. Very, very good stuff. Bayou Dragon, I believe is what it's called.
But, Swamp Dragon.
Swamp Dragon. Swamp Dragon. Yeah, look that up. Very good stuff. All right, I think that's going to do it for us tonight. Victor, great job manning the knobs, as always. Nice to have Randy contribute as well with part two of his thing from Jerry. And we've got more stuff as well. Ray, again, thank you for coming out to visit us. Amanda, great job as always. Gordon, you're always the Prince of Ham Radio. We will have George and hopefully Bob back with us next week. So I guess that's going to just about do it here for tonight. So for the assembled throng, we send our greetings and salutations out to you and the best 73 from those of us here at Ham Nation. So good night, everybody.